Good Tuesday, everybody. LZ, the Lakers are the number one seed in the Western Conference. They locked that down last night with their victory over the Utah Jazz. And what could be a lot of fun, what could be very meaningful, getting the home court advantage throughout the Western Conference playoffs. In this situation, feels a lot more anticlimactic because they're in the bubble and, okay, great, you're the number one seed. I guess that's good news unless you get Portland as your first team. It's a great indicator of them having put together a very, very solid season that they're going to be the best team in the Western Conference when it's all said and done at the end of the regular season.
I know my initial reaction to it all, especially, given the fact that we haven't had the number one seed in 10 years. And when we did, we won a championship. But I'm serious when it comes to the stakes. This is a franchise that only measures success by championships. And LeBron James is a player whose measuring stick for success begins with a finals appearance. Because when you do it for more than half the years you've played in the league, especially after that first trip, after his first trip, he's basically been in the finals damn near every year. So when you think about that, that's his measuring stick. So I'm not trying to be, some version of some contrarian who just want to poo-poo everything the Lakers. I'm not doing that. I'm just talking about what we won last night in relationship to how we measure victories. The division title was nice. The division title was nice. It's nice. It's like a hug. But I didn't come over here for a hug.
No, there are teams that there's different standards for different teams. If you're the Phoenix Suns and you're the number one seed, that's something to kind of puff up about. That's a big deal.
It's a parade.
Absolutely. If you are a team like the Clippers, if they got the number one seed, that would be meaningful because they really haven't really ever done that before. But then there's the other group of teams. If you're the Celtics, if you're the Lakers, certainly of late, if you're the Golden State Warriors, or if you're any team that LeBron James has been on, this part is just a kind of a check the box moment. Yeah, cool. Okay, we had the best regular season record in our conference, but this is not why we're here. Whether we're the number one team or the number three team or whatever it might be, it really doesn't matter because our real work is about to get started in the playoffs. That's what this is about. That if you're one of those very small handful, maybe throw San Antonio in there because they've won so many championships over the years. The Lakers are one of those teams. It's not about the number one seed. It's nice, and no one's trying to throw cold water on it, but the real work starts in a couple of weeks. This was the preliminary get yourself ready to go, figure out what team you are, figure out the rotations, figure out which pieces fit best together. But the real stuff, that starts in a couple of weeks.
It starts in a couple of weeks. And it's good to see AD bounce back from a subpar performance. It's good to see LeBron bounce back from a subpar shooting performance. His first two games, while he hit the game winner against the Clippers, he didn't shoot the ball well in that game. He didn't shoot the ball particularly well in the last game against the Raptors. And so it was good to see him shoot a percentage that we're used to watching him shoot with. Deion Waiters is still doing his thing. Kuz is still attacking. Dwight Howard, had himself his best game since the bubble. He was 4-for-4, scored 11 points. Utah is like one of those teams. Any team with a traditional center, you're just going to lose. You're just going to lose. Because you're not beating us up front. You're just not.
Right.
Any team that has a center that kind of moves around a little bit, maybe shoots the three, blah, 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 things that Rudy Gobert doesn't do, that could be problematic. But if you're a team that thinks you're going to just out-80s the Lakers with your big man holding down the middle and all that crap, no, you're going to lose that matchup.
No, they're
just because AD showed you why.
They're just huge. I mean, they've got so many big – put LeBron in there. You've got JaVale. The guys you mentioned, like AD and Dwight Howard. They're just Markieff Morris is another guy. He didn't play last night. But just so many big bodies there. You're right about that. I want to go back to the number one seed thing for a second. Did you see Kyle Kuzma's tweet, LZ, about being the number one seed?
No.
So no. Kuz tweeted last night, "Real Laker fans remember the losing seasons. Here you go, number one." I just like it when young guys remind you that they're young guys. I really like that. You know what I mean? It's like real Laker fans, Mr. Kuzma, remember championships. Real Laker fans remember that just getting the number one seed or just getting into the playoffs is not the goal. That winning championships is what this is about. So I get what he's going for, that since he's been here, the team has not been very good. Since he's been here, the team has been fighting to get into the playoffs and has not been successful. I get where his point of reference is, but there are quote-unquote real Laker fans that do precede your tenure here in L.A., and we remember what it was like with Shaq and Kobe, and with Kobe and Powell, and Magic and Kareem, and all the way back to Jerry West and these guys, and even before that, that this is not about number one seeds. This is about championship number 17. That's what we're waiting for.
That's what this is about. And, you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, he's been there through the hard days. You know, I appreciate the fact that he's been there through some really bad losing. And then last year, obviously, you know, with LeBron getting hurt right when they were just beginning to ascend. So I get his excitement, but, you know, that's a tweet from somebody who won nothing.
Yeah, or been around very long.
Or been around very long. But I'm going to say won nothing because I don't think he won much of anything in college either, and I'm not sure if he won a state championship in high school or not. So, you know, he don't know what this is yet. He doesn't know.
We're about to find out.
He's about to find out. Exactly. He's about to find out that number one seed. I mean, the Lakers have what? They're looking at number 18? They're going for number 18 now?
Yeah. I think 17. They've only been the number 17 or 18. Yeah.
But they've been the number one seed only 12 times. Only six of those times did they win a championship. In other words, most of the time in which we won a championship, we weren't even the number one seed. Mm-hmm. That's what this is about. It's about that grind in the postseason.
If they're going to get that next championship, LZ, this is something that you've been mentioning for a while now. Their guard play is going to need to be better. It doesn't have to be the best thing that they do, but it needs to be better because they've gotten beat up in the backcourt. We saw last night Mike Conley had 24 points. Donovan Mitchell had 33 points. We saw what Kyle Lowry did to him. We saw what Paul George did to him right out of the break. They're giving up a ton of action in the backcourt. And they don't have to go from where they are right now to locking guys up to 8 points a night, but it does need to get better than it is right now because that's the soft spot on this team.
It is. It is. And, you know, I'm not going to sit up here and say that Avery Bradley is the factor here. He is missed, but I'm not going to sit up here and pretend as if he's such a lockdown defender that, you know, Donovan Mitchell, instead of scoring 33, would have scored like 17 or 18. You know, great offense is going to be great defense every single time. You just want to make sure that guys know you're going to work. And Avery Bradley will pick you up at full court and harass you all the way to the top of the key, slowing down your ability to set your offense and maybe putting your team in a bad situation because they have just fewer seconds to work with. We missed that.
Did you get the sense last night, LZ, that it seemed to me that the intensity was turned up a little bit last night? And I don't know if it's because they were coming off of a loss against Toronto or we're getting a little bit closer to the start of the playoffs, or it's just the reality of when you don't play basketball for 4 months, it's going to take you a few games to kind of find your sea legs all over again. But to me, watching that game, it seemed like the intensity was a tick or two higher than it had been in those first couple of games. Just the intensity of each and every possession felt a little greater than it had earlier in the week.
Well, I would assume that anytime you have a bad loss, your intention of making sure you clean up some of those mistakes is really coming into focus. And I don't think that the Lakers made a lot of mistakes against the Raptors as much as they were missing shots. And AD not only missed shots, he didn't take shots. He only took seven. And he for sure came in and made sure that he wasn't passive, that he did not allow the defense to dictate what he was going to do. And against the Raptors, he allowed the double teams to sort of dictate shot selection and his impact on the game as a whole offensively. This go-round, he dictated. It would have been great to see him when he got that initial post, Travis, just get in deep in the paint. You know, don't, you know, once you realize they're doubling you, don't just go with the double. Allow the double to push you out further and create, make you into a passer. Impose your will the way that Shaq used to, which is, oh, you want to double me when I'm out here? Then I'm just going to post up right here at the front of the rim, and there's nothing you can do. I would have liked to have seen him do that against the Raptors. He didn't, and I think that showed in his performance. This go-round, it didn't really matter what the Utah Jazz, which is a good team, by the way, and a very good defensive team with a defensive player of the year in Rudy Gobert. But he did not mess around and allow the defense of the Utah Jazz to decide where his shots were going to come. He told the Utah Jazz where he was going to take the shot.
Where do you think LeBron is in the sense of going into this next playoff run and knowing he's got a guy on his team that I don't want to say is as good as he is, because I don't think there's anybody that qualifies for that category, but there's somebody on his team that could very, very easily be a finals MVP and no one would raise an eyebrow. He has not had that in a very long time. That has to be an incredible relief, maybe seems a step too far, because I think LeBron is incredibly comfortable carrying the responsibility that comes along with being the league's best player. I mean, he's been doing it for the better part of 20 years. But just knowing that, hey, look, I don't have to be what I was in Cleveland, where if I don't go and take over, knock down shot.
Well, we lost Travis, but I'm going to assume what he was going to say was that when you have AD in his groove, he's as good as any player in the league, including LeBron James. And he's absolutely right about that. And if you're a contrarian, you want to watch the Lakers perform this year, and you start saying things like, oh, I don't know, they wouldn't have won without AD. I think LeBron James is at this point of his career and in his arc as a man that he's okay with that, that his greatness has been established. He's shown what he can do when he's the primary focus. And I don't believe he is going to feel any certain kind of way if AD does, in fact, win the finals MVP, if we're so fortunate to win another championship. That is not an indictment on, you know, Chris Bosh or Dwayne Wade or Kevin Love or Kyrie Irving. But the reality is that AD is just better than all those players. AD is LeBron James's best teammate ever. And if he does, in fact, win the finals MVP, it won't be because LeBron James wasn't as good. It's because AD was just as good. And I'm okay with that, and I'm sure LeBron is as well. Coming up next, the Dodgers were back in action against the Padres. Things didn't go our way. We'll talk about why.
You know, LZ, I'm glad there was a Laker game on last night, because had it just been Dodger baseball last night, I fear for what you may have been going through. I know you were kind of white-knuckling it coming into the game, and that they dropped the opener of the series against the Padres. I was a little worried about your safety.
Well, listen, God made Bombay Sapphire for a reason. And I would think this was part of the reason. Rogers talked about it. We've all been aware of it. Certainly, if you didn't care about them before, when Manny Machado left for the Padres, you at least recognized that they had some talent in that squad. But last night, we saw that maybe this division won't be a cakewalk after all, that maybe the Padres are actually a really good team, that maybe the Padres may push us a little bit. I still think we're the far better team, but as the Dodgers have shown this early part of the season, that they can lose to bad teams. They can lose to mediocre teams. That's all part of baseball. And we're still waiting to see if the Padres can sustain this start, the 7-4 start, Travis. But the one thing that is clear is that they have the talent to sustain that start. This isn't a bad team that just had a hot beginning for weird reasons. No, this is a good team that has a 7-4 start that very well could be who they are.
Yeah, that's the rub right there, right? The idea of, can they sustain it? Well, here's the truth. We don't know, but they might not have to sustain it for all that long. It's only 60 games, right? This is not something where you say, look, because we've seen it before. Teams that are just kind of okay can look great for half a season, can look great for 80 games, and then it kind of falls back to where it's supposed to be. So you don't have to be a team that can make the 162-game grind or even an 80-game grind or even a 70-game grind. You just have to have some pretty good players that play kind of about where you would expect them to land, and you're going to win a bunch of games. And that's where the Padres are. The Padres are a good team with good players. Now, they're not as good as the Dodgers. They don't have the pitching that the Dodgers have. They don't have the depth in the bullpen that the Dodgers have. They don't have the flexibility in their roster the way that the Dodgers have. So I'm not worried about the Dodgers being an inferior team to some of the Padres or really anybody else. But what I'm telling you is that through 17-18% of the season, which is already where we are after 11 games, it might not matter. It might not matter. Now, the Dodgers are fine. The Dodgers have 7. The team with the most wins in the National League has 8. Okay, that's the Cubs. The Cubs are 8-2. The Dodgers have 7. They're in a really good spot. So it's not a time to panic. And I hear what you're saying. The Giants are lousy, and you can lose to a bad team. Good teams lose to bad teams in baseball all the time. All the time. The Yankees are a really good team. They're going to lose to some bad teams, too. It's just the way that baseball goes. But watching that last night, and this was my concern coming into the season, other than it just being a short season, was the way that Walker Buehler is being used. And it's not anybody's fault. It's just a matter of they didn't have spring training. It was rushed. He was behind. And now you're coming in on a pitch count. He came in with about a 75 pitch count last night, ended up throwing 77 pitches. He's just not sharp. The reason they hit 3 home runs off him last night isn't because Walker Buehler forgot how to pitch. It isn't because his stuff isn't good. It's because he's not sharp. And I don't care how good your stuff is. If you're behind 2-0, 2-1 to major league hitters, they're going to square you up. And that's what they did last night. And every time that's 2 starts in a row where he has been less than the best version of himself. Well, you're only going to get 10 or 11 starts the entire season. If 2 or 3 of them go the ways of we're just trying to ease our way into the season, it doesn't leave a lot of room to just let all the good stuff happen, because we know the randomness of baseball is going to pop up. These games matter. It sounds stupid. It sounds like, you know, if I would have said this under any circumstances other than where we are right now, that a game, the 12th game of the season is a big game. What are you, out of your mind? Have you ever watched baseball before? Tonight's game's a big game. It is.
It is a big game. It is a big game because of these 60 games. And, you know, we know that baseball is not going to give up 100 games going forward. So this is a real unique opportunity to see like a rush for the pennant condensed down to the bare bones number of weeks left to a season. You know, this is an opportunity for us to see, can baseball players flip a switch?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about basketball players flipping switches. We talk about football teams flipping switches. We don't really talk about baseball flipping switches because the season is so long. It's like you might flip the switch on in August, and it's like by September it might dim down again. So it's like we never really talk about baseball.
You know why we don't? Because you can't. It is not a sport of will. It is not a sport of I'm going to try to do more than I usually do. This is not a I'm going to push harder kind of sport. This is a sport that if I'm better than you over the course of a long season, I'll show that I'm better than you. If you're better than me over the course of a long season, you're going to show that. But in a smaller sample, it's just because the harder you try, the less it works. The good news if you're the Dodgers is Mookie Betts looks entirely comfortable. He's got the finger injury. Doesn't seem like it's going to be a big deal. He'll be back. We saw Cody Bellinger hit another home run. That's 2 home runs in 2 games for him. That's good news. We know that Seager is locked in. We know that Jock Peterson hit another home run, that A.J. Pollock is off to a good start. They're playing good baseball, so it's really good news. But tonight, LZ, when the game is over tonight, the Dodgers will have played 20% of their season.
Jesus.
When it's 12 out of 60 is 20%. They're going to have played 20% of their season tonight. So again, like I said, Cubs have 8 wins, Dodgers have 7, but so do the Padres, and so do the Rockies, and so do, you know, you look at some other teams, the Atlanta Braves have 7 wins. There's only so many spots. I'm not worried about them getting in, but what I'm telling you is this idea of, we'll be okay. You need to be okay right away. And the Dodgers are, but you cannot have a long extended period. And a long extended period in 60 games could be 4 or 5 games. I mean, 4 or 5 games is 10% of the season, arguably. So you look at it that way, and tonight is a game where now all of a sudden, if they lose tonight, they're in third place in that division. It's not where you want to be 20% into the season.
No. Now you see why I got so mad about them losing to the Giants? Now do you see why? Because when it's that few games, you really can't afford to mess up against squads you're not supposed to mess up with. And dropping one, okay, fine, whatever, it happens. But you lost two in a row. You split a season. You split a series with the Giants right out the gate. Like, that to me was, like, really disappointing because of the factors of what you're saying. We're at the 20% mark, and we have no distance. In fact, we don't even not have distance. We might be in a dogfight.
Yeah. Well, I guess if we're looking for a silver lining, it's that we might not get to the 30-game mark before the plug gets pulled. The Cardinals have already had their series suspended through the end of the week. They're not going to play again for a while. You look at the Miami Marlins have played 3 games. Dodgers have played 11. Miami's played 3. So this idea of, you know, all these different percentages, we're all crossing our fingers. Derek Jeter's out there saying, oh, our guys weren't acting irresponsible. They, quote, got a little too comfortable. Okay, call it whatever you want. They were out. They were doing stuff they weren't supposed to be doing.
Got a little too comfortable. What do you mean by that? I'm going to need you to elaborate on what you mean by a little too comfortable. Because it seems as if their actions lead me to believe they didn't give a damn. And not giving a damn is not the same as too comfortable.
Right.
Too comfortable means at some point you dropped your guard, but on most occasions you're doing all the things you're supposed to be doing. And then you got relaxed, and the next thing you know, you get screwed up. What it sounds like the Marlins did was say, ah, to hell with it. Let's go get it in, guys.
You forgot one part of that. I agree it was to hell with it. Let's go get it in. But the last part of that is we're on the Marlins. Nobody cares anyway.
No one cares.
Because if you're on the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Cubs or the Braves or the Brewers or any of these teams that have some aspirations, you can't say, forget it, let's go get it in, because you're going to mess it up for all of the fans, all of your teammates, because they do want to care. If you're on the Marlins, nobody cares anyway. Nobody in Miami cares, and no baseball fans care.
No. And I'm sitting here, and it's like, Derek, listen, Captain, okay? You can't defend certain things. This is a moment in which you should have been angry at your players.
Yes.
This is not the moment in which you make excuses for grown-ass men acting as if they didn't know that the Rona was out there when they're playing 60 games this season because of the Rona. Like, there's nothing but current reminders of the coronavirus if you're a professional athlete. You're wearing masks. You're not sitting in the same places. Like, there is no way the Rona slipped your mind.
No.
They just disregarded it, right? They just did not care.
LZ,
you need to call that out, dog.
Do you know what I would do to have coronavirus be out of my mind for even 20 minutes over the last 4 months? Do you know how nice
Seriously.
It would be to just forget about that for an hour or a day or even, you know, a half an hour, that it is in front of your face every minute of every day? So this idea that we got a little lax, come on, man. Derek Jeter, we're not as dumb as you're asking us to be. All right. Your idea, LZ, of fist fighting a shark may not have been as crazy as you initially thought. That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. You know what? I think you can scratch
what?
Australia off the list of places I want to go. Because wasn't it just a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about that one guy had to fight a venomous snake in his car? Didn't that happen in Australia too?
Yeah. He was in his truck. Yeah, he was in the back of his – he was in his truck. And he –
Well,
he had to handle his situation.
Now, not only do you have to fight venomous creatures in your truck, but you have to fight carnivorous features in the water. A 13-foot great white shark bit a man on the leg in the waters of Bunker Bay. That's in Western Australia. He's in his 20s. He was surfing at the time. Witnesses said the man hit the shark with his surfboard as other surfers rushed to his aid. Local ambulance crews responded to the incident after alarm was raised. A spokesperson for St. John Ambulance said the man had suffered injuries to his leg. Well, LZ, I don't get to say it as often as you may like, but you were right. Apparently, you can fist fight a great white shark. and live to tell the tale, because this guy got away with only a giant chunk of his leg missing. So I guess that's a win.
Yes, it is a win. Now notice, they didn't say, you know, had the man been skydiving, he would have been able to use a surfboard to save his life. Notice the story didn't say anything like that, or any foolishness that you and Roz try to have in regards to, I would much rather have my parachute malfunction than fight a great white shark.
Hold on. I'm Googling surviving skydiving accident, and there are plenty of stories. So it does happen. I would imagine it's about the same as getting into a brawl with a shark. Here's the thing. You know where I live. I live down here in Orange County. I have a bunch of friends that surf, and every time I see one of these stories, I send it to them. I'm just like, guys, I'm telling you, it's only a matter of time. And they're like, get out of here, man. It's never going to happen. It does happen. I can avoid falling out of an airplane because I'm never going up there in the first place to go do that. But I'm not going into the ocean because that's out of my control at that point. I don't have the wherewithal to hit the shark over the head with my surfboard. I'm not doing either one of these things.
Well, listen, man. When somebody attacks you, you don't have to think about it. It's a natural reaction. You're either going to freeze, you're either going to run, or you're going to fight. Those are the three. And I'm going to assume, Travis, because, you know, you played the baseballs and you went to college and all that stuff, that you're a competitor, and so you're not going to freeze, and you're not going to run. You're going to fight, Travis. You're a fighter. Pitchers fight.
Sometimes. from 60 feet away. I don't have to be.
Hey, they all about that jog out the bullpen, but sometimes when you get up to a couple in front, they're just trying to hold back teammates.
No, you've got it all wrong. First of all, never jog from the bullpen. Always walk. Always walk. It's bad for the look to run in from the. But just I'll get out there when I get out there. I'm gonna take my own sweet time. That's one of the reasons I was drawn to pitching. Is it was the only position on the field where it was okay not to run. You could walk into the dugout. You could walk out of the dugout. It was all good. But congratulations.
Ross, I'm beginning to see a theme. I'm starting to see
yeah,
a
I'm trying
theme
to tell you.
Travis.
That's right. He made it, though. I don't have to ever want to find out for myself. But you talk about freezing, Nelson. Can you imagine? You're in the water. You're getting ready to surf. I know you've been out there a few times. And something just takes a piece out of your leg. I mean, was there anything scarier in the entire world?
So I've been surfing in the Pacific in Costa Rica, and I'm not a great surfer. I'm not even a great swimmer. It was actually a dumbass move when I really think about it. However, I was out there. I've been out there a few times, but the last time I was out there, I was overwhelmed with this feeling of vulnerability. And I'm not quite sure if it was just, you know, the Holy Spirit saying, yo, heads up, dog, you about to be lunch. Or if it was just, I finally like realized the dynamic at play. But I got out of that water as fast as I can, and I've never been surfing since. Because I'm sitting there on the board, and my legs are dangling, you know, and I'm just, you know, chilling. And it just dawned on me, I was like going, I don't even know what's underneath there. I don't know what's thinking about me. You know, and I was like, what you doing, dog? What you doing out here like this?
You know, it's funny you say that because, like you were talking about, you either fight, run, or freeze, right? Those are the three reactions that just human beings have been hardwired to do those things so we survive. I was hiking in the mountains in Santa Barbara. This was, gosh, a while ago, several years ago. And it was Susan and I were taking a hike, and we're deep into the mountains. We've been hiking for a couple hours. We're out there. And like you were just describing a second ago, I had this moment of, you know what? We shouldn't be out here. This is not for us. We are not outdoors people. I do not know what to do in the event that something crazy happens. And so we went a little bit further, and then we hiked back out of the mountain. So it was about, you know, it's 2 hours in, a little bit less coming down the hill. And we get down there to the trailhead, and I didn't see it at the beginning, but at the end of it, I see this sign that says, oh, this is mountain lion mating season, or some crazy thing. Like, they are out, they are, and I'm like, I really wish I would have seen that before I went in there. But you're right, you have that moment where you're like, you know what? This is a bad deal. I am in a place where I am not in charge of what's about to happen. I need to get the hell out of here, whether it's the ocean or the woods or whatever. I need to get out of here because I don't call the shots anymore.
It's a strange feeling because, and I don't know about how you feel, Travis, but like you said, like I just assumed because I was on top of the food chain that it didn't really matter where I was on Earth. I was good. I could do whatever I want. And then for some reason, as I'm sitting there and I can see like my friends on the beach and, you know, I'm not a great surfer. I'm not even going to try and pretend. Like, I've gotten up, like, you know, maybe 10 times I've gotten up and all the times I've been. So I'm not great at it. But, you know, you feel good once you pop up. You're like going, yeah, you know, all right, look at me go. And then I started thinking about it. I was like, yo, dog, you barely out here like that. You don't know what's
out there.
You don't know what's out underneath the water. You don't know what's looking at your feet.
Nope.
That's the worst
part of it all, right? Is that it could come from underneath because you can't see into the water. And like in the woods, it's going to see me long before I know it's there. This whole thing has been made through millions of years of evolution to be quiet until the last minute. That's not my deal. This thing is going to be on top of me before I know that a fight has even started.
LZ, you're right about one thing. So the safest to be in the ocean is without a surfboard or a boogie board, because when they see you and they see the legs, they're really not tripping off of you. It's underneath when you are on a surfboard, you look like a sea lion or something. They come from below, take a little bite, like, oh, no, this ain't nothing. And they just let you go most of the time. So,
yeah, and then I bleed out.
You know, it gets an artery. It has to get an artery. There's like one in something chance.
So in the midst of my shark attack, you want me to go, excuse me, Jaws? Yep. Could you not get the artery, please? I'm trying to make it back for dinner. Could you just, you know, just take this piece right here. I never did like that foot anyway.
Travis is right. You do feel more out in the open in the woods because, like I said, they see you far before you see them, and they know exactly what you are, and they still might go take a little piece. That's all.
Well, look, I can't speak to a shark's palate, but I would imagine that I'm not all that different than a seal when it comes to flavor. You know what I mean? Like, once it takes a pee, again, you know, that guy's not so bad. It's nice and soft and tender. I'm gonna finish that guy off.
Think about me. Talk about you. I'm the one that moisturizes with cocoa butter and hair.
Well, you've been seasoned.
Yes. I'm like, my hair is washed with like coconut water and all this stuff. I'm a freaking fruit salad in the ocean. Talking about you, I'm like, I'm definitely going to be. Yeah, I ain't going out there, dog. It's a wrap.
I was thinking about going back on a hike today, and I just talked myself out of it. It looks like a good few hours on the couch is and now I have an excuse. Mountain lion fear. I'm not going to do it at all. Take it or shake it is coming up next. All right, LZ, let's start with an idea of whether or not the college players, Pac-12 players in particular, are going to get what they want. No matter what they ask for, college players are going to be looked at as being greedy. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
They can get it done. Shake they can do it.
I would think maybe 3 years ago, there might have been a somewhat generalized consensus that the compensation of a free education was enough for these students. But I think now, as people are becoming more aware of the power dynamic and the structure in terms of society at large, and then the NCAA in particular, and the simple fact that you have these universities openly saying things will collapse if we can't get some sports going because we're so dependent upon that revenue. I think now it's just hard now for the NCAA to come back and be like going, oh, they just kids. It's hard, man. No one's buying it.
You know, it's You know what it reminds me a lot of? It reminds me exactly of the Colin Kaepernick situation, where when Colin Kaepernick first took his knee and people very quickly, oh, it's about the military and patriotism, and they were able to dupe enough people into that. Now you don't have the luxury of doing that anymore. Go ask Drew Brees if that example will fly anymore. This is the same thing. You can't say, oh, they get it. They've got a scholarship. I had to go to work. No. Like you just said, these universities are saying, we have to have these guys on campus. We have to play football, or the economic structure of this is going to collapse and we're all screwed. You can't still say your scholarship is good enough if the administrators are saying, look, we have to play or we don't have a business anymore. So the option of being willfully ignorant or uninformed of going on is out the window. Let's move on to the next one. Here is who we were talking about a minute ago. Let's listen to Derek Jeter talk about why he thinks half of his team tested positive for coronavirus. Go, Jeter.
Where you see the lemon pepper wings at Magic City, they just so tasty. And my guys, they were hungry, so they swam by Magic City. But they left. They just picked it up. They didn't get any dances. And if they did, they were 6 feet away.
All right.
I guess, the big part of the quote is what probably happened is we have a false sense of security. Take it or shake it, players got lax, and that's why they tested positive.
Shake it. They didn't get lax. They didn't care. There's a difference.
Right. There is.
Raj and I love going to the gym, right? We love going to the gym. If we lose our gains during the pandemic, it's not because we all of a sudden stopped caring. It's because we got lax, right? The dynamic changed. We just lost some of our... But if you're just a person who hates working out, you not going to the gym is not being lax. You just don't give a damn. Ding. And what I'm saying is that the Marlins just didn't give a damn. They didn't care. And that's all it is. And Derek Jeter needs to call his players out and not make excuses for them.
Yeah, it's a bad look for Jeter's ownership run in Miami has not been great. It's not an easy place to try to have a successful team for a variety of reasons. But the way that he's positioned himself in this thing from the jump has been weird. For a guy that was as incredibly popular and well-liked as Derek Jeter was as a player, not so much as an owner. Let's stick with baseball right here. Angels made an announcement yesterday that Shohei Ohtani is done as a pitcher for the 2020 season. He is day-to-day as a DH. Shohei Ohtani's days as a two-way player are over. Take it or shake it.
Ohtani might be over. Ohtani might be over. You know, as quickly as he came, we have to accept the fact that maybe, just maybe, he was a flash, and that once he got to this level of play, you know, having moments was easy. Having sustained moments is proven to be difficult. And it's quite possible that the Ohtani era is already over before it really began.
Well, look, like you said, it could be a flash. The fact of the matter is that there's a reason those are two separate jobs. And since he's been here, he's had one season that was pretty good and parts of two others that have been a disaster. The disaster has been far greater than the success. And he's certainly talented enough to pitch in the major leagues. He's certainly talented enough to be an everyday player in the major leagues. What I don't know is if his body will withstand being able to do both, because so far it's said that he hasn't. I think that season we saw where he was one of the best pitchers in the American League and was a threat to hit a home run every time he came up, that was the exception, not the norm. I don't think we're ever going to see it again from him. I think two-way players may become more and more fashionable, especially if the DH stays in the National League, like I think it probably will. But for him, he may have been the guy that opened people's eyes, but I don't think it sticks. It just doesn't seem that way. The Angels have always had trouble keeping players healthy, pitchers in particular. They seem to have all sorts of arm problems. Let's go on to this one. The Rock is part of a group that is buying the XFL. The XFL will work with Dwayne Johnson at the helm. Take it or shake it.
Shake it. Man, look, what city am I from?
Detroit.
The ghetto.
Detroit. Born and raised Detroit Lions fan. I don't know who the people are that are owners of the Lions right now. I kind of have a general sense of the name, Ford. I know they got it for sale. Somebody's looking to buy it. The point being is, I don't care. I don't care who owns the Lions. I don't care. I don't care who owns the league. So as much as I like The Rock and his movies, and I think he's a great personality and a hell of a story, I'm not going to watch the XFL because he owns the team or he owns the franchise or he owns the entire league. I'm just there to watch the sports. And the XFL as a sport just wasn't compelling enough, not just for me, but I would say the vast majority of people, because it's folded.
Well, you know, it's funny. It was working in places. It wasn't working here. The team here in LA just really didn't get any traction, which is not a surprise. There's just too many things you're competing with in LA. But it was working other places. St. Louis in particular, that especially places where there was not NFL football, it did seem to really – and I hear what you're saying, that we don't care about the owners. But if the owners have a good vision and the owners are able to kind of support the product the way – and I'll use this as an example. And I know it's not perfect, but – ownership with Donald Sterling was one thing. Ownership with Steve Ballmer is a totally different thing. Just propping up and making, giving your people an opportunity for success. And I don't know what the XFL's relationship with the WWE was in this latest iteration of this, but it didn't seem like they were propping each other up. It seemed like an independent business. If The Rock can get people involved in this that know how to produce, that know how to put on a show, which I thought the WWE was pretty good at, I don't know if it can't work. It's not the NFL, but it can be a viable spring football league. I do think there's an audience for it. It just can't be in NFL cities.
I was going to say, they need to take the approach of like, you know, double A or triple A baseball or something, where they try and target mid-sized places. But see, I think these owners, these guys, they want to make a lot of money. So you need major markets to do that. But to your point, they have football teams. And if you're in New York or LA, you have multiple football teams. So it's like, what is we doing here? Why am I being bothered with the XFL?
All right, let's go to the NFL for our next one. The Seahawks are reportedly both kind of mildly interested in Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon. Both Brown and Gordon will play in the NFL this upcoming season. Take it or shake it.
Go Hawks.
Shoot, Travis.
Ah, gotcha.
Why are you making stuff harder my last week? I'm going to shake it.
Yeah, that's too much.
I'm going to shake it. Not both. You being greedy now.
Which one's going to make a shot?
I was going to say, if I had to choose between the two, I think AB. If I had to choose between the two, I'm going to go AB. Because I think the upside makes the risk. Even after 8-game suspension, his upside still bring a better risk reward than Gordon's, in my opinion.
I guess it depends on what it is you're trying to get done, right? Because I agree with what you just said. Antonio Brown is a better football player than Josh Gordon. Antonio Brown, if we're being perfectly honest, is probably still one of the best wide receivers on the planet. So the potential payout is big on Antonio Brown. Here's the rub, though. I still don't think Antonio Brown ever plays another snap in football, for the simple reason is that dude can't get out of his own way. Every time you think he's getting ready to start again, he does something else crazy or crazier than the last time and self-sabotages himself. I don't think people in the NFL really want to take a chance on Antonio Brown because they know he's going to go off the deep end at any point. By all intents and by all reporting, everybody likes Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon just has problems. Josh Gordon has some stuff in his life that he needs to get figured out before he can go play football. But I think people are willing to try again with Josh Gordon because he's not terribly – disruptive the way that AB is.
No, he's not. He's not. But despite all the problems, AB appears to be the one that's more reliable, which is crazy. But when you look at just look at games, I mean, he's the one that's actually has been able to hold it together to show up on Sundays. Unfortunately, Josh hasn't even been able to give us that much.
Yeah, he's got it bad, man. I feel for him because, you know, he's another one of those guys that everybody seems to really like. The Lakers locked down the number one seed for the first time in 10 years. Does it actually matter? That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.